Fusion Patrol is brought to you in part by our patrons at patreon.com/fusionpatrol. We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are looking at the Series 3 opener of Blake 7, Aftermath. We join the story near the end of the battle against the aliens from Andromeda. Federation and alien losses have been enormous. Star One itself has been destroyed. The Liberator is badly damaged, and life support systems are failing. Avon, Villa, and Callie are separated from Blake and Jenna and are attempting to evacuate the ship before everyone is killed. Avon is knocked unconscious by an explosion, and the others place him and Orak into a life pod and send him into space. As life support runs out, Villa and Callie are unable to open the remaining life pods. On the planet Sauron, the primitive natives see the space battle as an omen that they must kill any strangers who come from the stars. Survival pods from the fleet are beginning to arrive, and the Saurons are out to kill all the survivors. One of those survivors is Avon, who is still groggy and nearly killed, but is saved at the last moment by Dana, a young woman with a bow and arrow. Dana is human. She and her father and adopted sister live in an undersea base hidden from the Federation and the Saurons. On their way, they bump into President Servalin, as you do, and they all take refuge in the undersea base. Avon makes contact with the Liberator through Orak. Auto repairs are proceeding. Blake and Jenna escaped, but got separated. Jenna was injured, but is aboard a hospital ship. Callie and Villa are missing. Avon instructs the Liberator to come get him. A ship is attempting to dock with the Liberator. At first, Avon plans to destroy it, but realizes it might be Callie and Villa. So he orders Zen to allow it to dock, but then he loses communication. Servalin explains to Avon that Star One is destroyed, the aliens were destroyed, and 80% of the Federation fleet was destroyed. The Federation is in ruins, and Servalin has a proposal for Avon. Together with Orak and the Liberator, they could rule the galaxy side by side. Tempted, Avon steals a snog, then rejects Servalin violently, throwing her to the floor. Avon then stupidly takes a nap without Orak under his pillow, so Servalin steals it and tries to make an escape, but not before she murders Dana's father, who was a political dissident. She hides Orak to force Avon to bargain for taking her off the planet. Dana wants to kill Servalin, but Avon acquiesces. At the last moment, they get the bracelet off Servalin and teleport up to the Liberator, but Servalin escapes. On board the Liberator, a Federation officer confronts Avon and Dana, accusing them of attempted piracy of his ship.
A cliffhanger! Ah, it's a cliffhanger!
Well, so, Aftermath. The first episode after Blake's triumphant victory over Star One, or is it his triumphant loss of Star One? Not entirely sure.
Well, that's a really good question. In fact, that was one of the notes that I had about that. If Star One is completely destroyed, doesn't that pretty much bring the Federation to its knees, just as Blake wanted?
Exactly.
And yet, now Servalin is president.
Or remains president, at least for the moment.
Well,
she is kind of stranded on a planet.
She became president.
Right, just before the end. She declared martial law in the last episode, remember?
Yeah, but we didn't hear anything about the presidency until now.
Yeah, actually she did.
Did she declare herself president?
Yeah.
I remember she declared martial law. I don't remember her declaring president.
She declared martial law, and her assistant, the one that she was threatening if he didn't come up with an answer, later was referring to her as Madam President.
I thought he was doing that facetiously.
Well, I think since she was having the president and all those people killed or rounded up, as it were, I think it was pretty clear that she was making her power grab. But, you know, even still, she probably declared herself president, wiped up her opposition, and then when the battle was ending, she caught a space cruiser out to the battles to put in a show that she was there with the troops. And
yeah.
That's how she ended up on this.
And, of course, now,
United.
Yeah, She's president of a federation that's completely ruined. At least the one thing that I did like is that they did not neglect the warnings that Blake received in Star One about what would happen if he were successful in destroying it, the havoc that it would wreak on the entire Federation. I mean, and the number of innocent people that would be so negatively impacted by it. They addressed it. I mean, not in super detail, but they did not sweep it under the rug either. So it's nice to be reminded that the Federation is really just a shell of its former glory now.
Right. It'll be interesting to see as we go on how the planets have fared in this new post-Star One era.
Yeah. And I'm really curious. Once Blake gets rescued from God knows wherever he's at.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's next?
What's next? You know, didn't we have this kind of conversation previously about, okay, you know, you got your revenge, you know, then what? Well, now we're at the then what? I mean, as far as he knows,
where free men can think and breathe. Isn't that what he stormed about once before?
Pretty much, yeah. Okay, so he can think and breathe on, think and breathe on his own. Great.
Something like
I guess what? Just go back to Earth. Let Avon have the Liberator like they had agreed to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not much of a
would the others go along with that agreement? I can't picture Avon being entirely in control of the Liberator.
Not fully. I think Villa would go along with it. Callie, that's
Callie
a good
might.
Question. She might.
Jenna,
no.
No.
She won't go along with it.
No, I think she'd want the Liberator for herself.
I think so too, actually.
I don't think she'd follow Blake's crusade, but I think she'll.
No. What kind of crusade is Blake going to have now? That's just it.
Well, building a new government?
I suppose. Which would be completely outside of Jenna's interests.
Yeah. Yeah, she wants to get back to
she's a pirate.
And smuggling and stuff.
She's a pirate. And what better ship to commit piracy than the Liberator?
Yeah. So one of the things I think is interesting about this episode is we don't get much of the rest of the crew.
Avon episode.
There's definitely a very real possibility here that we're not going to see Callie and Villa again, because they were stuck aboard the Liberator as life support was going out and they couldn't get the life pods open.
Ew.
So
and a Federation trips boarded them no, life support was going out.
Yeah, life support was going
so
out.
That,
so
they would
die. We know Avon got word from Blake and Jenna, or the Liberator got word from Blake and Jenna that they're okay, but separated. But nobody's heard anything from Callie and Villa. Anyway, I think what we're getting here is the beginning of perhaps a new story arc, where in this episode we concentrate on Avon getting rescued. And
right.
Then, you know, we'll probably move on to Blake or Jenna or try to find out what happened to Callie or Villa. I don't know. But it was obviously this was the Avon show. He must have had it in his contract.
This isn't the first time he's had an episode that where he was heavily given the spotlight.
Well, heavily though. I mean, this is what there was 1 minute of the rest of the crew, maybe, and then this is the Avon show.
Well, this is the one episode where he gets to really act opposite Jacqueline Pierce.
Oh, and the interesting thing, you should mention that. She is currently starring in the John Hurt War Doctor Big Finish audio.
Oh yes,
plays.
And yeah, she plays someone nice, doesn't she?
She plays the Chancellor, I believe, of the Time Lords, and she was giving an interview, and I was shocked because when she introduced herself, it turns out her name is Jacqueline.
Oh, Jacqueline?
Jacqueline Pierce.
Jacqueline.
Jacqueline.
Oh, how utterly pretentious.
It is sort of rather, isn't it? Yes. Anyway, just to correct it. Yeah, this isn't the first time he's met her?
I am trying to – he may have met her, but this is the – she obviously recognized him.
Project Avalon.
I think this is the first time – yeah, possibly. I think this is the first time where, though, they've really gotten to work – this closely together, and let's be honest, that was some of the best scenery chewing I've seen in this series so far.
Weapon. They were together in Weapon briefly.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so it's kind of weird. Some weird things going on. Dana kisses Aven. Aven kisses Servalan.
Yeah.
Are we getting in the kissy show here?
Are
those the first non-cousinly kisses we've had on the... I mean, Blake never gets kissed, except for from his cousin.
His cousin. Ew. Yeah, I know.
And Gan is the only other one I can think of that got a kiss, and that was way back in Cygnus Alpha before.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So...
Yeah. Let me think. Yeah, I think
you're onto something. Paul Darrow's renegotiated his contract.
Yeah.
For Series 3.
I have to have so many kisses per season.
Yeah. Well, we'll just get them all out of the way now. You can kiss Servalan, then choke her and throw her to the ground.
Yeah.
That was, yeah. That scene was just a remnant of another era, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reminded of a certain Star Trek episode, so. Well, okay.
So then the other thing is, did we see a softening of Aven's character in this? Because there were a couple situations where he didn't kill.
True. I thought that was a little peculiar. Normally, he would take the easiest opportunity. Not in a really murderous sort of way. But if it was in his best interest to completely eliminate the enemy, he would have done so. And he doesn't.
And that's what I'm saying. He stops Dana.
Yeah.
And she's got somebody down and pulls a bow and arrow out, and she's going to club and say, stop, no killing. Like, what?
Why?
Who are you? Who has stolen Aven's body and taken over his mind?
Yeah, right, the pod person right there. He's a space pod person.
It could be. Well, and he was in an escape pod.
Yeah, so he's an escape pod person.
Perhaps a escape pod makes you irrekissably resistible. Irresistibly kissable, and also stops you from being the killing person that you are. I don't know. Kind of odd.
It was a bit
kind
odd.
Of odd.
Yes.
But I'll be interested to see if that carries forward, if the next couple of episodes are going to be concentrating on the other characters. One of the Japanese Sentai shows, Ninja Sentai Kakuranger, about midway through the show, they decide that they need to have a super power-up and that each person has to go it alone of the five team members, and they have to face some major challenge that is a particular weakness in themselves. And so at this point, they separate out.
And that's, over the episode. Yeah, and then, I'm familiar with the gimmick.
Yeah, so over the next few episodes, you're concentrating on one character, and then you move on to the next.
It's funny you mentioned that.
And they come back together, and
I was thinking that just as you were starting to mention that, I was thinking, you know, that's probably what they're going to do here. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if maybe next week you get Blake, week after that we get Jenna, and you know, I'd really be interested to find out about Callie and Villa. Of course, that's assuming whether they, you know. Whether they got off the ship.
I'm sure they got off the ship, but, yeah. But
and if they did, then, yeah, have another episode that completely spotlights Callie, another one that spotlights Villa. And, you know, and then you bring the whole band back together.
And now they're a new Uber team with their new found powers. And although Blake's just going to be insufferable. He's just going to be dancing around going, I did it, I did it, I did it.
Oh, going to remind me of Bugs Bunny when he stole the locks from the canal and the Panama.
Yeah, that's right. I remember
I did it.
That was the same time he cut Florida off, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
yes.
That was. Two out of three ain't bad. let's see, what else do we have here? It's kind of a nothing episode, but
it's not bad. I mean, it's a termination.
I enjoyed it.
I did too. This is a Terry Nation. I mean, it's kind of fluffy, you know, but I mean, it's not Robert Holmes.
The Saurons are definitely exactly what they need to be.
I know.
Species that has prophecies of lights in the sky, and then people from sky will come and they need to kill them, which just coincidentally happens to be the alien space battle. Mm-hmm. That just makes them to be.
It's so convenient.
It's kind of like. Do you remember, let's see, was it Deliverance? where Avon saved the day by launching the gene bank into space, and for no apparent reason, there's just a bunch of cavemen type living on the surface to cause them problems.
Oh, yes.
That's what the Saurons are here in this episode.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're very two-dimensional. They were merely a slight plot complication for the sake of the story. I mean, it was really all about Avon Servalan and Dana and her father.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was really all about them, Hal Mellanby.
So, Servalan, Avon is of the opinion that she would not have shared power with him. He says, I'd be dead in a minute or something.
I think he's right. She would, maybe that's a slight exaggeration. She would have him for as long as she could use him. The moment she had all the cards back in her hand, oh yeah, he's meaningless. He's useless. If she felt that he became completely irrelevant or even possibly not quite in harmony with her goals, yeah, she would get rid of him. I think he's right.
I mean, I think he's got a good point. I just, Servalan has shown a predilection to keeping around some of her boy toys.
Yeah, but they're useless.
They are, but then Avon is not useless.
No, but Avon's also really smart. He's very clever. He's very willful. Her boy toys are not. They're idiots. So they're not a threat to her. And she's changing boy toys, so she probably gets bored with one, jettisons out the airlock, and then she gets on another one.
Okay, then let me ask this question. given the premise that let's say they go into a partnership and then Servalan would kill him. Okay, that's position one and dispose of him. Now, position number two is that they go into this partnership and Servalan doesn't kill him. Would Avon kill her?
That's a really good question, especially since now we have compassionate Avon.
Yeah, I guess that's what... We have stupid Avon for not taking Orak with him when he went to take a nap. I couldn't believe that he isn't dragging that box out with him when he
blame that on Terry Nation.
That was an incredibly, incredibly contrived and stupid mistake on his part. Considering,
yes, it was.
Oh, yeah. I have trouble believing that one. Frankly, that's the kind of bonehead stunt Blake would pull. Yeah, I trust you in the living room. That's fine. You're good there.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think, and I spotted that as I was watching the episode. I saw Avon walk away and leaving Orak there in the living room. I thought, wow, not what I would have done.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously we're not going to see Hal Mellanby again in another episode because he's dead.
But, he's dead. D-E-D dead.
And Servalan was very rotten to him, too.
As I expected her to be.
Well, not just,
she was torturous.
Yes.
She was torturing him. I mean, that was just evil.
I don't feel her motivation there. he was a rebel before her time. She remembered him. But with the Federation shot, and I'm not saying she wouldn't kill him, but is that a new... Is that a newly extra cruel streak in Servalan?
Is this her new acquired superpower?
Yeah, has she moved into?
Now she's sadistic.
In the past, ambitious.
Yeah, but not sadistic.
I hadn't seen that.
There was
that time when she was toying with Governor Legrand. In whatever that episode was, I can't think of it now. Voice from the past. Wow, that's pretty good. But that's a different kind of toying with.
Right.
So, yeah.
And then I'm thinking about the one where the gun that marks people.
Mm-hmm.
But there's...
Weapon, yeah.
Yeah, weapon. But that was more a little personal glee. She wasn't actually torturing the people she... Travis and Blake and anybody else. She wasn't torturing them. Especially if, in the case of Travis, I mean, who was largely unaware that he had been tagged. So there's no glee to be earned from watching him suffer. Not like she was doing with Hal. She took some kind of really weird delight in watching him blindly try to swing at her. as she was taking pot shots.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that was cruel.
And also...
it makes no sense.
It makes no sense because it's also foolish. If she's trying to get out of the facility, killing him quickly is the best thing she could have done.
Yeah.
Not giving him a chance to cry out, not making noise, not taking extra time, all of that stuff. It's just completely, utterly...
Although, with all that yelling, boy, I would have thought someone would have come a lot sooner.
Yeah. Well, Avon was asleep, and...
Dana was asleep,
and they sleep heavily, apparently.
I guess.
So maybe Aurak snores. Maybe that's why Avon didn't take... I bet I could probably take those sound effects and...
String
them together and create a snore.
Yeah, I'm sure you could.
The Aurak snore.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see more of Dana in the next episode.
Well, given that she's on the ship now, I have a funny feeling that, we may see a little bit of her until they can find, I don't know, something to do with her.
Maybe they'll kill her.
Maybe that's possible.
What they're saving her for, is to kill her off in the next one. I don't know.
Well, it's very possible.
She seems...
possible.
What do you think of her?
Well, at first, I saw her as just... she was just... there was something kind of... I hate to say it, but there's something that was a little bit vapid about her in the very beginning when we first meet her.
Yes.
And then now she's just like... there's something a little bit bloodthirsty about her, but at the same time, something kind of... there's a certain ignorance there.
She's definitely very naive.
Yeah, very. And she's grown up there for how... I mean, what, since she was a child?
Yeah,
so she's had just only her and her stepsister. That's it.
And there was that whole scene with Servalan and her being as catty as possible to each other. That scene was very...
Yeah, she... there's a lot of weird emotional behavior in this episode that doesn't exactly make sense. Some of that she would not have any concept of. I mean, she wouldn't know how to react to Servalan the way Servalan was treating her. She wouldn't know how to respond to that. She'd be more puzzled by it, I would think, because she's an innocent.
Well, and I think she wasn't reacting correctly to it. I think that she, Servalan makes some comment about it being plain or unsophisticated or something like that, and the clothes, and Dana replies with, like, you don't think it's too young for you or something like that?
Oh, which sarcasm.
Was a very catty remark, and then Servalan, totally dripping with sarcasm and deceit, says, well, I do hope we can be friends. And then Dana just brightens up. It's like, I do too. And you go, oh, she totally did not get the subtext of this entire conversation.
No.
She's completely missed it. I thought she was being catty, but it turns out she was just actually not being catty. She was being sort of offensive through ignorance with the bit about the age thing. It was definitely...
I could see that.
Unless, of course, they meant it to be both ways, which is even worse. Thank you, Terry Nation. You can't have it both ways. She's either sophisticated and sharp enough to engage in the battle, or she cannot be too naive to realize Servalan didn't really want to be her friend. Or it could be bad acting.
So let's look at what is usually a good indicator about how well a person can act, and that is her grief over her father being found dead. It was okay.
I guess it was all right.
It was okay.
She was very upset.
She's supposed to be. And now she's gone from innocent and happy and somewhat vapid to now I must kill Servalan.
Yeah. Which she doesn't get to do.
No.
So maybe that'll be in the cards for later on. Although they
maybe
can't kill Servalan.
Oh, no, they can't. No, they can't kill Servalan.
No, she has to go back and rebuild her empire. Let's see. Oh, Mike Yates.
I was going to say that. Captain Yates. And as quickly as he escaped, he appears to have been killed by the natives. And that's one hell of a cameo.
Does it count as a cameo if you're not, like, particularly famous? I mean, I think he's just a jobbing actor at this point in his career, so.
Well, this was 1980.
Yeah.
When did he do Doctor Who?
That in 74?
So, I mean, maybe he was just a jobbing actor at that point.
And
he lost his celebrity status when he...
Did he ever have it? I guess that's my question.
Well, I think he did. I think he had some celebrity status when he was a member of UNIT. I mean, you're on Doctor Who, for crying out loud. And you're a regular.
In the 1970s.
But you're on Doctor Who, which was enormously popular. You are a regular. You are a member of UNIT. You work side by side with the Doctor. Yeah, I kind of think you're a big deal. And maybe he thought he was.
Well, I can't comment on his motivations in his life. But anyway, yes, he had a brief little part in this episode just to give us a little exposition about the destruction of the fleet and the epic historic battle against the Andromedans and their ragtag fleet of every kind of ship imaginable. And then he's dead. So,
yeah, pretty much it. I was really surprised by that. Seriously. I mean, even if he is just a jobbing actor, usually someone like that usually gets a little bit more scenery. And wow, talk about just, you know, taking him out as quickly as possible. Maybe he had a brief window for shooting shooting the episode.
Could be that.
Like only had one day. So I can fit you in on Tuesday and that's it. So you'll have to figure something out. Okay, we'll kill you. How's that? Perfect.
I'm sure that's what it was.
I have a feeling that's probably what it was. So I'm looking at my schedule, and I've got very numerous convention appearances I have to make. So I can only fit you in on one day.
Well, then we're going to put you in a Federation uniform, let you climb out on a beach, a nice sunny beach, I'm sure, warm summer day, and kill you with a bow and arrow.
Oh, I think that sounds absolutely smashing. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. I've got a lot more about this episode. It's really kind of setting the stage, I think, for what's to come.
That's all this really is. This is just, in some ways, you know, this is something of a reboot. Not a reboot, more like a reset. Or is it a reboot? I don't know. Maybe there. It's a
new
reboot.
Chapter.
Totally new chapter. But it's like It feels like the series is being rebooted in some way, but not from the very beginning, just rebooted in a whole new direction.
Well, I mean, there is one thing we didn't mention and we should definitely mention, and it's a long, long past time that they upgraded the cheesy, cheesy opening credits
that
they had for the first 2 years.
Now with animation.
It looks almost like the ships are the models instead of the cardboard cutouts. I mean, almost. As the Ritter flies by.
It's funny. I actually made a note about it. It says, based on the season 3 intro, I would think that I'm about to watch a cheesy Saturday morning children's cartoon.
It is. Yes, it is. Let's talk the credits. Let's talk the initial credits. That incredibly awful computer-generated Blake and the dome busting and in the first one were really – and, of course, they had the paper-animated ship.
Right out of Monty Python almost. It was tragic.
And so here they've moved into the second season. They've eliminated anybody's faces from the episode. We're just sticking with pursuit ships and the Liberator and shooting lasers and stuff, which is all way cool. But it's still, I don't know, it's still kind of cheesy.
Right, you're saying second? This is third season.
Second set of credits.
Second set of credits.
This is the first redesign of the credits since
absolutely.
The show began. Doctor Who went how many years? 3 years before they redesigned the credits? And then Blake 7 only went 2. So I guess that's fair. So I don't think that means they got a bigger budget.
Not likely. Although I will say that I sort of dug the set that Dana and Hal lived in.
Oh,
I kind of liked
it.
Yeah, it was kind of far out. Kind of neat. You know. Fun plastic furniture because that's so utilitarian.
Do you know what they didn't have back then? That every like British science fiction show and frankly every British show that I watch on BBC that they have now that they didn't have back then?
What?
IKEA.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know where they got that furniture from back then because you can just go through the line now and look at British shows and go, yep, IKEA. IKEA bookshelves. Yep, IKEA chair. Yep, that's an IKEA table. Back then, I don't know. Chairs R Us. Where'd you get the plastic? But But that set had a lot of, well, a lot, some, maybe, if my mind is not playing me, it had some stuff hanging down, didn't it?
Mm.
Like, I wouldn't say tinsel, but like
yeah, I seem to remember
stuff.
Something, yeah.
So, still doing the cheap. Kind of like they did in Gambit, where you just kind of structure the black room and...
Well, this is the BBC.
Yeah.
I mean, cheap and BBC are synonymous, especially in the 70s. True.
Especially since they're paying the big Starbucks to Richard Franklin, you know, to get him in on a little podunk show like Blake 7.
Yeah, really.
So they had to cut back on
Yes. They had to pay him like God knows how much just for a quick little death scene. And but,
£4, 6 shillings, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Is that the day, right? Do I get lunch, darling?
I'm sorry, but we're going to have to kind of short sell you on the sets. So just make sure not to sit on anything, will you? There, that's a love. Thank you.
On the beach for you. Well, so I think that's Aftermath.
That's pretty much it.
Well, we've completely defeated the Andromedans. We've wrecked 80% of the Federation. We have no more computer control. So now the planets are all having their own weather, and they don't have any spaceflight control. I mean,
Orca can help.
Yeah, Orca could, like, run the whole thing.
Yeah, imagine that.
If only he had the power to take over other computers.
That would be really helpful, but, you know, that'll never happen because that's just silly.
He is Star One in a box.
Yes, he is. He always was.
Or he should be, yeah.
He was supposed to be.
So, we've started the age of the aftermath of the fall of the Federation.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
I wonder what evil conglomerate
lurks in the heart of Servalan.
The presidency of Servalan, if indeed she is even still the president of anything, or whether she's going to be a more hands-on villain in upper future episodes.
Well, not so much Blake, really. It was the Andromedans. I mean, they successfully robbed her of her power base.
Yeah.
Essentially it.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. All right. Well, Ben, thank you for joining me.
A pleasure.
And listeners, I hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Leave us a review on iTunes or stop by and visit us at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fusionpatrol. Our Twitter username is @fusionpatrol, or you can just send us a comment at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Come check out our new YouTube channel at youtube.com/fusionpatrol. Please, come join the conversation. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf. We beat off the Andromedans. I don't think we have... I'm going to restart that again.
Thank you.